Hare Krishna. Reading from Surrender Unto Me, an overview of the Bhagavad Gita. This is the third chapter, Karma Yoga, and continuing the comment explaining how karma and karma kanda gradually progresses one to bhakti. So continuing. Karma kanda sacrifices meant to attain either short-term or long-term results are born of the mode of passion. They are performed for selfish sensual enjoyment. Long-term sacrifices, however, are a step further on the path because they are based on the implicit acceptance of the soul's eternality. The performer of the sacrifice will think, I am not this body. Therefore, I will perform opulent sacrifices, leave this body behind, and attain swarga, attain heaven. Within that thought is the seed of eternal spiritual life. Then he hears from his priest that there is distress even in heaven. Indra fears attacks on his kingdom. Thus he realizes that he too will experience fear, even in swargaloka. Despite having fulfilled his material desires, he recognizes that his heart is still devoid of true satisfaction. Gradually, the truth of material reality dawns on him. Birth and death are everywhere, and the material world is temporary, frustrating, and miserable. Over time, he becomes receptive to the philosophy of transcendence. Having heard from his priests about sacrifices and having experienced their results, he has become more trusting of the priests and the shastras. He has also become more detached from material life because performing sacrifices has allowed him to taste the happiness of sacrificing the hard-earned results of his work. His goal slowly evolves. He no longer thinks of attaining more material happiness, but of leaving the material world. Now, after having heard countless verses glorifying karma kanda sacrifices and their heavenly results, he is ready to consider the jnana kanda section of the Vedas and to contemplate a non-material spiritual life based on the soul's eternality. Thus, he is no longer a karma kandi, but a karma yogi. A karma yogi is someone who has accepted transcendence as his objective. There are two types of karma yogis: Brahmavadis, impersonalists, who are impersonalists, and devotees. Each may be on one of two levels: Sakam, with material desires, or Nishkam, free from material desires. If a Brahmavadi associates with merciful and powerful devotees, he can abandon his attempt to reach the Brahman and aspire for loving service at Krishna's lotus feet. Both types of karma yogis progress gradually from sakam to nishkam by dutifully performing their prescribed duties. As their realizations increase, they also become more detached from matter. Thus, they leave their performance of sakam karma yoga and climb to the next rung of the yoga ladder and become nishkam karma yogis, performers of dutiful detached work. Although a devotee who practices nishkam karma yoga possesses a different understanding and is therefore differently motivated than a non-devotee practitioner, in both cases, the inspiration to work is not a fruit of desire. Both work on different platforms of jnana. While progressing in this way, however, the nishkam karma yogi may conclude, my prescribed duties are meant to bring me material rewards. I no longer have material desires. I don't want a son or money or a nice house. I have no desire to go to swargaloka. I know I'm not my body. Because I no longer have material desires, I do not need to perform my prescribed duties. In the following verses, 17 to 32, Krishna explains why One freed from material desire should nevertheless perform his prescribed duties. 17 through 18. But for one who takes pleasure in the self, whose human life is one of self-realization, and who is satisfied in the self only, fully satiated, for him there is no duty. A self-realized man has no purpose to fulfill in the discharge of his prescribed duties, nor has he any reason not to perform such work, nor has he any need to depend on any other living being. Comment. These verses describe an atmarati, one who takes pleasure in the self. Such a person is not concerned with loss or gain while performing his duty, nor is he disturbed by obstacles. The next verse explains whether or not such a person should work. 19. Therefore, without being attached to the fruits of activities, one should act as a matter of duty, for by working without attachment, one attains the supreme. Comment. Working without attachment is renunciation, renunciation caused by knowledge. Krishna now gives an example of one elevated to perfection by working without attachment. 20. Kings such as Janaka attained perfection solely by performance of prescribed duties. Therefore, just for the sake of educating the people in general, you should perform your work. Comment. If Arjuna renounces work and goes to the forest, as he is suggesting, people will follow his example. What will happen to them? They will find themselves in difficulty because they will be externally renounced, but internally absorbed in their material desires. Krishna next confirms the importance of setting a proper example. 21. Whatever action a great man performs, common men will follow. And whatever standards he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. Comment. Few people consider their own disqualification. Quote, he is more qualified than me, so I should be wary of my tendency to imitate him. If we see another's activities and they seem pleasurable, we immediately want to join in. We do not stop to consider whether such activities will uplift us or degrade us. Krishna's instructions to Arjuna are meant to uplift humanity. Even though Arjuna, being highly qualified, might do well by going to the forest and begging, others who are less qualified will become degraded because they will imitate Arjuna without considering their own disqualification for renunciation. Krishna now uses himself as an example. And we shall stop here. And very soon, Krishna willing, we shall hear that the example that Krishna gives of himself as working. Okay, thank you. And Hare Krishna.